Hello, you're listening to a podcast of the best bits of Breakfasters with Mo and Bron and Daniel for this week ending Friday, June 19th, 2026. You can catch us live on Triple R every weekday morning from 6 to 9am, broadcast on Wurundjeri Country, Australia. And coming up on the pod this week, Bron reminds us of that time that David Campbell thought his son was Princess Di reincarnated, and it got us wistful for daytime TV gone by.
And some heartwarming words from Con from the ASRC in this week's Talk World Refugee Week. And Celia Pecola, fresh off the back of her best show win at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, was in to talk Gift Horse, her new show.
We embark on the undignified work of IDing celebs in the wild, and our coffin curious book reviewer, Marieke Hardy, unpacked Deborah Adelaide's latest work of autofiction, When I'm 64.
Triple R.
There's so much content, so much news out there, and we cycle through it so quickly that I think we forget so much of it. Like, there's so much stuff that happens that is just falls out of everyone's brains. There's one in particular I've held on to, one bit of news that I like to bring up at a dinner party. Something you can take this with you. You can use this one. My favorite one, news story that I think almost everyone's forgotten, is that David Campbell, son of Jimmy Barnes, he went on TV and said that he thought his son was the reincarnation of Princess Di. Do you remember this?
No, not at all.
Was this
I wish.
Recently?
Like it was 2019.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not that long ago. But
so we can't blame long COVID or anything.
No. Yeah, pre-COVID, before everyone lost their minds, he was on whatever morning show he does.
Mm.
And he said his son, Billy, saw a picture of Princess Di and he said, "Daddy, that was me as a princess." But then the siren came and I wasn't a princess anymore.
They stripped the tiara off. Yeah. The paramedics came and ripped off the ground.
Tucking his chin into his chest
looking up.
How old was the little freakazoid child?
I think it's a freakazoid dad. Yeah. Kids say that kind of shit all the time.
In the story, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in the story, he comes off pretty creepy. And I think he was like maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I'm with Dave. That's interesting.
Apparently he could describe Balmoral inside and out.
The palace?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I like it.
Did he do it on camera?
No, I don't
Not
think.
Not real.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
David's just pushing it.
My son is so bright.
My son is,
you just have to just take my word for it.
You think your kid's smart? My kid's Princess Di. So, beat that.
I mean, it was, I presume it was a chat. It wasn't like a segment.
I think it was just a chat.
Yeah.
He's
still done it on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully by the time Billy's in high school, people have forgotten it.
He just gets called Princess now. Queen of Hearts.
There is a guy in a university in the States, and his whole job, he's a specialist, child psychologist, and he just sees kids with kids who remember their past lives.
Wow.
What a job. Sam's Jimmy. So if you've got a kid that knows who they were in past life, you take them over to Jimmy.
Pretty sweet gig, eh?
Yeah.
Unfalsifiable and all that crap.
Yeah, totally. Oh, so you were a what in your past life? Okay, cool. And so this is going to an hour appointment and you need 10 of them.
Yeah.
And no Medicare.
But they're always like, it's always like Princess Di or Anne Frank or something.
Yeah, Princess Di is a popular one.
Yeah, it's never someone who like worked in a fish factory or something.
Oh, no, it's never just like, yeah, I worked in a... Yeah, making peanut butter or something.
So, sorry, there's got to be another explanation.
David Campbell.
His son is flicking through what, New Idea at 3 years old?
That's Daniel's issue. What is that magazine doing lying around the house?
But he's flicking through or is it a conversation he's had, you know, before David Campbell arrived on the scene?
Well, apparently his mum got a birthday card with Princess Di in the front as like a joke or something.
Yeah.
And then he saw the card and he went, "That's me as a princess." And then they showed him more photos of Princess Di. And they showed him a photo of Princess Di with William and Harry. And then he cried and he said, "My boys."
Right.
Oh, my God.
It's all true.
I love it. It's
everyone missed this story, and I don't know why, because it's my favourite thing that's ever happened in Australian entertainment ever.
Yeah, I've never, it's not even vaguely familiar. Even looking it up, nothing.
Nothing.
I was like, have you made this up? Have you made up that he made up, that his son made up?
It's all real and it's all out there. You can look it up.
There's the other morning show with David Rain. James Rain's brother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I should forget this. It's actually very unfair that this is stuck in the memory for so long. But they were talking to some medical professional about a clinical trial or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there were maybe there was some upside to the trial, or people who took the drug did well. Anyway, the medical person says that people received improvements in whatever condition they were talking about from the placebo. And Dave Rain was like, wow, you know, why don't we mass manufacture this placebo? Because that sounds like a real breakthrough in medical science.
Is that the brand name?
And can you get a generic version of this placebo?
Yeah.
I don't know why you're upset you've held on to that. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to see it. RIP, that show.
What show?
Which show was that?
I don't know. It was Channel 10 from 9 a.m. maybe.
Oh, it's not like The Circle? Was that?
No, that's a different show. It was The Circle.
Not GMA.
No, do you remember Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, with Stan Zemanek. Why do I know his name? This is the stuff that sticks in your head. I can't remember my tax file number.
Jeannie Little.
Mm.
Jeannie Little.
And I
Slugger.
Ida was on it. Yeah.
Oh, Ida was on it. Mm. Of course.
And what was it? He was just awful to a bunch of bitches. Is that what it was?
Oh, it was a great show. It was very entertaining.
Was it? I can't. That's the thing. I just remember being one of those shows that, like, the premise was he's like, they were like, oh, you, and he says some controversial
things.
It'd
be like The View with Carl Sandlands in the middle.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a good point.
Oh my God, let's get that going.
You're trying to sell it. And it's a good show. It's very entertaining.
Well, when you're home from school, and it was on air for like 2 or 3 years. These things loom so large, but I was reading
really
about it recently.
Old?
Yeah, it was a very short run.
Wow, I think as a kid I thought it was for adults. Like, so if I was home from school, I'd be like, oh no, they're talking about it. They're probably talking about cleaning or something. not Bert and Moira. Not Bert.
Lovely leggy Moira. I miss that. Yeah, daytime TV. I miss being sick from school. A bit of Blue Heelers. That was normally on during the day.
Like reruns. Sons and Daughters. Did you ever watch Sons and Daughters?
No.
God, that's pretty old.
That was my mum used to. I think mum used to tape that. She must have been. She's always been a terrible sleeper, and I reckon she must have got hooked one night, like when it was on, and then it would be the thing where like she would put get the VHS in to record it and watch it, and she just loved Sons and Daughters, but we weren't allowed to tell anyone. She's like, don't mention Sons and Daughters.
Now it's safe.
When your godmother comes over.
So you've mistaken that for a daytime show when it was a nighttime show?
Or it was both or whatever, but she I think she came across it and then it wasn't feasible to watch it whenever it was aired, that she used to tape it.
What was it?
It was a soap opera, an Australian soap opera.
I mean, 82 to 87.
It was it?
Mm.
So there would have definitely been, I wasn't even born. Yeah, there would have definitely been reruns.
It's amazing that she was so into it.
I know, it's so funny.
Far out. Who tapes really a soap opera and watches it years later?
Rowena Wallace was in it, who is very recognisable. Was she going to be Pat? She was Pat the Rat. That was her character's name.
Of course.
I reckon I met her once and I was like, oh, Pat the Rat. And I don't think she'd appreciate it. She's probably gone on and done like Shakespeare or something. She's like,
God. No, Pat the Rat.
Oh, and on Good Morning Australia.
Did you? Did you get to meet Belvedere?
I did, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And John Michael Housen.
How was it?
He gave me $50.
As an appearance fee or live on
just
air?
I was young and I was doing something and he wanted to help fund it with $50. But it was like, I'm going to need more than $50.
But I'll take it.
It's like getting, like, Nana gives you a birthday card and hasn't checked the inflation rate since 1984.
Like, I want to go to New York to write. All right, let me help you out here.
Exactly.
Triple R on FM, digital, online and via the app.
We're in the midst of World Refugee Week, which this year marks a significant milestone. And ahead of its World Refugee Day annual telethon this Saturday, we're joined by CEO of the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, the Duracell Bunny of Community and Solidarity and Action and Inclusivity. It's Con Karapadna, GTNS. Welcome back to Breakfasters.
Thank you for having me.
What a week, huh?
Oh, Pauline. bless your hateful little heart. It's been a week, it has indeed.
Tell us about the ASRC, how it's going and how you're... Yeah. The theme this year of the week is courage, is that right?
Yeah, last week we turned 25. It's 25 years since I founded the ASRC, and over 25 years we've been a movement of hope and welcome and safety for refugees from more than 60 different countries. We have directly or through our advocacy helped more than 100,000 refugees. Tens of thousands of refugees in this country are free and safe because of the ASRC, and we do it without any federal government funding, independent and fearless, and always together with refugees. And our organisation is made up of people from more than 50 different nations who speak more than 100 different languages. We are proudly multicultural. That is our strength and that is our diversity, from our beautiful Socceroos to the ASRC to our amazing Bangara Theatre Company. We are this incredible multicultural Indigenous country. And aren't we beautiful and aren't we proud of it?
You're in charge of morale. Yeah.
Well, listening to Pauline Hanson yesterday talk about an Australia that has never existed, saying we are not a multicultural society, we cannot be one. 65,000 years First Nations people have not only been here, but they've had more than 500 First Nations tribes, languages, family structures. Go and have a look at the map of this actual country. And now we're home to people from more than 200 countries who proudly speak Greek to my mum in my home, to 300 plus languages, 120 faiths. And we have the second highest minimum wage in the world. We're in the top five most livable countries in the world. We're fourth in the world for happiness and safety for families, second in the world for healthcare. How successful are we? And it's because of our diversity and strength. So when she sits there talking about this white fantasy of this white supremacy Australia where everyone else is erased, we need to push back, not from a place of anger and hate, because she clearly hates this country, but from a place of love and unity, because we are always stronger together. Mm. And on Saturday, we're all going to be cheering the Socceroos from 15 different cultures and ethnicities. Are you telling me that is not multicultural Australia at its finest? Or when you hear a welcome to country inviting you into their traditional lands, how proud do you feel to be part of the oldest continuous living culture on earth? This is what gives us pride and love. Who watched Pauline Hanson yesterday and felt anything but shame and hurt? I was crying at parts of it, just sitting and going, how dare you try to rip this country down simply for power and for votes backed by billionaires and big coal?
There's a lot of stats in what you just said. Yeah. Do you think a lot of it is, and I know this is an obvious question, but a lot of people just don't realise, do you think it's a lot of ignorance? Like, if you were to point that stuff out to them, certain people, is it easy to change their mind? You would have changed a lot of minds in your time.
I believe it is. I believe most Australians are good. And I've found every day at the ASRC, we put on a hot lunch, over 150 people break a meal together from dozens of different countries. And every time people come in to visit us, who are at times, oh, I don't know about refugees, and they sit down and they're like, oh, these people love their families. They believe in hard work. They want to give back to this country. Hate relies on us never meeting each other, never breaking bread with one another, never knowing each other. It can't survive without its oxygen being dehumanization, distortion, demonization and lies. But once you connect people, you can't hate someone on a full stomach. but that's what Pauline Hanson and her like. Angus Taylor the same, they're relying on this idea of the bad migrant versus the good migrant. My mum's been here 53 years and she goes, am I one of the bad migrants who worked on tobacco farms and then in factories until my body broke down so that I could give back to this country and enable my children to give back to this country tenfold? This is what migrants and refugees have done forever. And we did celebrate a million refugees as a momentous part of Refugee Week. And it's Refugee Week, so what a great time to celebrate how great our multiculturalism is. When you watch her scapegoat, what was so shocking yesterday was watching no one single journalist go, based on your proposed cuts to immigration, you are going to drive this country into a recession. You're going to cost us the 2032 Olympics. You're going to cost us a $20 billion build of hospitals in Queensland. You're going to basically face an existential threat for most regional remote towns across this country. No one asked her that. No one asked her. So we're going to become the first country in the world to no longer be a signatory to the Refugee Convention or force migrants who are permanent residents to wait 8 years for a safety net. So while the Australian citizen kids are trying to support their mum and dad that they've been reunited with, they're also going to have to carry the responsibility of their elderly parents because apparently they're not Australian enough. That's what they should have been asking her yesterday.
Mm. Well, you're plugged in globally, and I'm wondering if the mood here matches or if you could see it coming a mile away. I mean, I'm noticing the Greek Prime Minister talking about the return hubs and the EU getting involved in migrant law. Can you weigh in on that?
Yeah, look, I didn't... After the last election, I was so proud, thinking we've rejected the politics of hate and division with the failure of Peter Dutton. So I didn't expect it to come here at this scale. And what we're seeing across the world, in Europe, it breaks my heart seeing that in places like Greece, in Italy, through Scandinavian countries, the United States and the UK is the worst. I mean, last week they were trying to lynch and burn alive refugees in the UK, in Belfast. I mean, it's terrifying, yeah? So what they're all feeding... We are seeing a combination of the rise of the far right, the Farages, the Trumps, the Hansons of this world, the idea of the strong man. We're seeing technology being used in a way to provide disinformation, misinformation at record levels to create fear. And also we're seeing here in Australia, the Prime Minister of this country, so gutless when it comes to defending multiculturalism. He's afraid to even say the word racism exists. He's afraid to even speak about immigration. So Pauline Hanson is not possible without three things: the backing of billionaires like Gina Rinehart, the failure of political leadership from a government, and an opposition that is completely found wanting, and the fact that there are real economic issues facing Australians who are struggling to keep their heads above water, who need real solutions, but so do their migrant and refugee neighbours, because we're all struggling. And what we've got is this vacuum. And in this vacuum, it's the perfect recipe for a Pauline Hanson. They're just a whinger. They have no solutions, but they know how to punch down and scapegoat, don't they?
Mm. Yeah, she's just hung around until she's got her moment.
Her message hasn't changed. It's just exactly right. 30 years of trying to divide us, make us hate each other, and make us afraid. And we need to be asking ourselves, the future of this country, do we want it to be one that is divided, that is hateful, that is small-minded and fearful? Or do we want it to be what we are now, this incredible multicultural indigenous country that is one of the most livable places in the world, one of the most envied places in the world, because we are magic. Walk into any neighbourhood in this great city of ours and imagine it without multiculturalism. Imagine Sydney Road without multiculturalism. Imagine High Street without multiculturalism.
What about baked beans on toast? It's pretty good.
You almost want to say, okay, you want a monoculture? Okay, well, we're taking back our pad thai. We're taking back our souvlaki, our moussaka. Yeah. We're taking back even our fish and chips. We're taking... even beer was invented by Iraqis. You can't have that over for me. All the snacks.
So there is a ray of light with the telethon.
Yeah.
And tell us about the live performances and the guests and the silent auction.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful. So on Saturday, June 20th, after we've all cheered like crazy for the Socceroos from 5 a.m, at 7 we go live. Mm. And we've got, again, this beautiful multicultural Australia. You know, everything from Russia, who's the CEO of Para, Palestinian Australian. We've got Travis Lovett, who just did the beautiful Walk for Truth, a proud First Nations man. We've got Claire Bowditch performing in the morning. We've got Kishwa Chowdhury. We've got Darren Purchase from the Australian Great Bake Off. This is us, this beautiful multicultural Australia. And we've also got a live auction that goes till 10 p.m. Saturday, including a framed and signed by all the Socceroos jersey for auction.
Oh, really? Yeah.
As well as helicopter rides, weekends away, all sorts of beautiful things. Even a Western Bulldogs football, all signed by the players. But again, there's so much goodwill out there. And so for 17 hours, I will, with my team, be asking people to donate. And it's not about the money you give. It's about the message you're going to send this Saturday with your support. Mm. And I want to send, in the last week, they've gone and fundraised $4 million for hate and fear and division. Mm. And they've been bragging about it. On Saturday, we're going to fundraise for love, not hate, unity, not division, compassion, not more fear-mongering. If they can raise $4 million in a week, we can at least raise, what our goal is for the day, $1.5 million in a day. That's our goal. It's going to be tough, but I believe there are enough Australians out there that care and can rally behind us on Saturday. And we kick off Saturday, 7 a.m.
People will be up and about. They'll be excited. Mm. They'll be ready.
Yeah. And you can already go and bid on the auction now at asrc.org.au/auction. And you can donate at that same place on Saturday for our telethon. And look, most importantly, right now, we need positive leadership. Mm. We need people to come forward. I even put a call out yesterday on Instagram saying we're a bit short of volunteers. I've got 3 dozen people in the space of 3 hours going, I'll give up my Saturday to come and help. There are so many good people out there. And there are so many people that are looking at what Pauline Hanson did in feeling powerless. And I'm here to tell you we're not powerless. Go and look after your neighbours. It's about being a good neighbour. In Greek culture, we have the term philoxenia, which means to welcome the stranger, have love for the stranger. It means to understand any of us could be that stranger. It's a lottery of time and place. Yeah. So let's welcome each other. Let's protect each other. Because One Nation is coming after all of our cultures and communities. Not only did they attack refugees and migrants, they attacked women, workers' rights, climate change, trans youth, First Nations people yesterday. They're coming after all of us. So what do we do at a time like then? We unite with love, with our values, that we are from many different places, but what are we together? Proudly Australian. So we're going to cheer the Socceroos at 5 a.m. And then at 7 a.m. we're going to go online, or we're going to call the ASRC, and we're going to donate to send a message that we are this beautiful multicultural Australia. We will never be monocultural, and we've never been monocultural. This is what makes us magical.
All right. Sounds like a plan. You can head to donate.asrc.org.au.
Yes.
That'll take you straight there. The telethon kicks off in one day, 22 hours and 2 minutes and 4 seconds, according to the countdown clock.
Cannot wait.
Which I'm very excited about. It's just a shot in the arm to have you in studio, Con Karapanagiotidis, CEO of the ASRC.
And
thank you,
Triple R, for 25 years of supporting refugees and the ASRC, and a happy 50th for later this year as well. Please get behind Triple R as well.
Melbourne's own Triple R.
Celia Piccola is a comedian, writer and actor whose screen credits include Utopia, for which she won the Actor for Best Performance in a TV Comedy, The Beautiful Lie, earning her an Actor for Best Supporting Actress, the recent Dog Park, and her co-creation Rosehaven, which earned her an Australian Writers Guild Award for Best Narrative Comedy. Now, 20 years after making her stand-up debut, Celia is set to take the stage at the Comedy Theatre with her show Gift Horse, which this year took home Most Outstanding Show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And here to tell us about it before she leaves for Edinburgh, the Taskmaster favourite and renowned jazz sceptic joins us now. Celia, welcome to Breakfast.
Oh, my gosh, well, standing ovation. Dan, do you do that every day? That was incredible. You're like a coiled spring, and a jack-in-the-box of information. Because I've been here for 4 minutes, and we've just been chatting, and I'm like, Dan's quiet. What's going on?
He's getting
an
all.
Blammo.
Right. Gosh. Yeah. That is the best description. A coiled spring in the
coiled
corner.
A spring in the jack-in-the-box of information.
Yeah, and then we run defence while he sits in the corner.
You do. You really have buffered him. That was incredible. I appreciate that. That seemed like a lot of effort. I couldn't even be bothered.
You went to the effort to leave that life that you have.
Thank God you did. Otherwise, what would he say?
Oh, my gosh.
We were talking about off air. Yeah. We had Dr. Jenny in for Weird Science talking about clockwise and anti-clockwise.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people can't even read a clock. We're learning. I'm wondering about you and a new child and you as a teacher.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, terrible. I can't read a clock either. And she's 3 and we are closely. I thought it would take longer for her to get to the point where she has more information than me, but we're reaching it already at 3. Like, she's asking me questions that I don't.
You're parody.
No, particularly plants makes me sad because my mum used to, she knows what the flowers are and the trees are, and mum's like, and my daughter is like, what's that tree? And I'm like,
green.
That is a tree. And that is another tree. And it's green, I'm going to say. Camellia, really? Mm-hmm. Doesn't have any flowers on it. Well, who knows? So I don't really.
Do you lie?
I do lie.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we've got it. We just took her dummy off her and we had to lie. Well, is it lying if it's magic? Is
no. It magic?
So we told her that we buried her dummies in a pot plant and overnight they turned into lollipops. And I stand by it.
And did she get lollipops?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now does she want a lollipop every time she goes to bed?
No, because the dummies are gone. They're the dummies. Yeah. That's where the dummies have gone. They can't come
back.
And
it was worth the trade-off.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, so the lollipops are massive. So she doesn't have a dummy anymore. She does have diabetes, but but no, it's she's so I do lie. But teaching, I don't know. I'm not good with the facts and figures, or just how to explain the world.
Yeah.
But my partner is quite good at that.
As long as one of you is good at it. Yeah. She's getting the information from someone.
And also, I'm a big believer in it's okay to say you don't know. So I am teaching her that it's okay to say,
both,
I don't know. You're
both lying and displaying your
ignorance. Yeah. I also can't draw. You have a three-year-old. Did you learn you can't draw? I can't draw.
I'm terrible. But then the good news is, so is he.
Well, yeah.
But when I say, I don't know, learning he says, together. Why don't you know? And I say, because I don't know everything. And then he says, but you do.
Why don't I
know. When I say, no, I don't. I'm stupid. Don't want to talk about it. Oh. So I can say I don't know, but it's not good enough.
It's not good enough.
It's like, go find out.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
What about dumb activities? Yeah. Activities that you've neglected? I'm getting into remote control cars for some reason.
Oh, fun. I've learned that my mum likes trains more than I thought she did. So when mum comes around to look after my daughter for an afternoon, the trains come out and I come in and Eleanor's like reading a book and my mum's on the train. So I'm like, mum, you can just play on the train if you want. What are we doing a lot of? Magic. We're doing spells. So I'm quite into fairies and magic and crystals. I took her to a witch market. Is that okay? I'm being very witchy in the perimenopause. I think that's okay. But for her, I love it more than princesses and stuff. Like fairies and magic is very natural, and so I did that as a kid, so I'm back to doing that. Like
potions?
Potions, right. Which is just, apparently it's all bicarbonate soda, but I'm no scientist, so I don't know. But like glitter and getting a stick and wrapping a ribbon around it. And that kind of
what's a witch market? Sorry. Is this what it sounds like?
I could tell you, but I don't know.
Is it like a bunch of witches?
Someone with a velvet tablecloth.
It's a lot of purple. It's
yeah.
It's a market, but it's people selling like crystals and also just jewelry and a lot of pewter.
Yeah.
Dragons and stuff. Yeah. It's
a bit
sparkly.
Of fun.
Yeah.
It's a bit of friends fun. Who, we go around their house, their toddler pulls out a tarot for us on the way in. Yes, there you go. All right, thanks, Rita.
There you go.
Yeah. So what do we do? So we do a lot of that. She's into, she likes swimming a lot. She's doing gymnastics. I don't know, she does so many activities, I can't believe it.
What did you do? Play
with sticks outside.
Yeah.
I grew up in the Yarra Valley and it was go for a walk and play with a stick and be bored, you know?
Did you collect the sticks?
Did I collect
home? If you found a good one.
Yes, well, and then we burnt it. We were...
It's getting a bit witchy now.
Yeah.
It's quite easy, isn't it?
You've been witchy all along.
This is how bored I was. I used to stand under trees and taunt the wind.
What?
I was so bored. I would stand under a tree and I'd go, wind, go windy. And then I'd watch the tree to see if I could control the wind.
Oh. And you could.
No. Well, not as much as I would have liked. I think that was a hangover from Captain Planet. Ring powers, and you're like, maybe I could.
And then one of them was Heart, and it's like, what do you do?
Heart talks to animals. I know, but Heart sounded lame because they go, fire. And they'd go, Heart. Which was like in Hamilton, and Peggy. That's a very specific reference that people will know when they say the sisters.
I chose not to see Hamilton.
Really?
Look too much.
Too much.
Too much going on.
Is this what normally comes up? I feel like I've just come in, like I feel like I've just woken up and it's been so many from witches, and now I've somehow got us to Hamilton. I don't know how I did that.
Well, you don't want to talk about kayaks, do you?
No, I don't.
No.
I'm also very excited. I've learned this morning that the song that you're playing before I came in is called Gift Horse, which is the name of my stand-up show, which I didn't know. But how much is this for a fluke and a bit witchy kismet is I never have good titles for my show. This is the first show ever where I had a title before I'd written the show because I knew the show was going to be about the fact that my boyfriend gave me an inflatable kayak for my birthday. It's a bad gift. The whole show is like one terrible commercial radio segment. It really is. Like, give us a call. Is your boyfriend giving you a bad gift? It's so silly, but I love it. It's really about getting a bad gift. So I knew I wanted to call it Gift Horse because the proverb, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, and it was short and sharp. And then it was only when I started doing the show, which I wasn't going to do, I realised that 2026 was the year of the horse.
Of course.
And also happened to be my 20 years since my first ever gig, and has turned out to be this show won best show. It's been my best year. It's just a bunch of sort of stuff that wasn't supposed to happen, but the year of the horse coinciding with it, me calling it Gift Horse.
Special.
I feel is, am I magic?
I think you are magic. What will you do next time?
This is fun. Don't tell anyone, but secret. It's just because we're talking about witchy stuff. If you are interested in me talking about witchy stuff, I did a show called Let Me Know How It All Works Out years ago, which was about when a palm reader told me that I couldn't have kids. Turns out wrong. I have a child now. But it was 10 years ago. I was really proud of that show. It's online if you want to watch it. It's about my era of witchy stuff. But recently, I haven't had a reading in a long time, but I think the perimenopause and I'm getting all witchy. Mm-hmm. And I got in touch with a psychic that I used to see that used to do a Zoom reading, and she dumped me. I got dumped by my psychic. She sent me a message saying, "I'm sorry, Celia, but since I've seen your show," she saw my show we're talking about.
And she was offended. Psychic.
She's like, I don't think our values align.
Oh my God.
I can't in good faith read you.
Yes, I know.
Wow. Imagine getting rejected by a psychic.
I know, it was
but
brutal.
That is excellent marketing because, like, but what stuff does she have on me?
I know.
And I'll never know.
Wow. I suspect, I know, but it still hurt, even though I'm like it was so silly. That's fine. Do what you want. You're right. I did do an hour. I think I was quite pro psychic in the show. I was very anti palm reader, but listen, that's beside the point. But it still kind of stung. But I feel like when she said, "I think our values don't align, I worry our values don't align," I think what she was saying is, "I worry you're going to talk about me on stage," which is fair.
Because you will. Anyway. And you'll do it again.
But this show is very silly. This show's about family and friendship and what it means when you get a bad gift. Because I think it's more than just being materialistic or greedy. I think if someone gives you a gift that feels wrong for you, particularly if it's from someone close, it makes you think, don't you know me?
Don't know me at all.
Don't you know who I am? Do you just not care, or do you really think I'm a different
Into
person?
Kayaking.
And so this is the last time I'm doing it in Melbourne. I'm doing it Thursday night and two shows on Saturday, which is sold out, and I'm filming it, which I'm very excited. For the first time ever, I'm filming it twice. So usually I just film it once and I go, that's the show, whereas this time I'm filming it two times.
And then do they stitch the best bits together?
I guess. I don't know. I've never done it before. I might feel like
one night
just
there's
choose
a bunch of duds
it.
In.
Yeah.
That's it. So you're not on TV.
But my favourite thing about doing the show is I'm doing it on Saturday at 4 p.m.
Oof.
And 6:30.
Yes!
In bed even by 8.
How's that? My late show is at 6:30.
You won't have enough time to get home and yell at the wind.
I know. I'm so sorry I told you that. I'm yelling at this is how bored I was as a child. I also...
Did you have siblings?
In primary school, but two older sisters. I stared at the sun for a while to see if I would faint. What level of boredom? Don't do that. I don't
recommend
that.
Were you also a breath holder? Did you used to hold your breath to see if you could pass out?
No, but when I did make a friend, we try and wind each other, which is give each other a big, pick them up from behind and go, can I squeeze you hard enough till you faint? Jeez, the children out of the country, we need more things to do. Yeah. Give us hopscotch or something.
I remember climbing into a tree and just like going along a branch, seeing how far I could go. And then it just snapped off and I fell out of the tree.
But then you learned.
And then I learned, And my dad watched it happen. He was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
But I'm going to let you do it.
Yeah.
And as a parent now, I'm terrified of her touching anything harder than marshmallows. I'm like, I'm a gasper mum. Which is a completely useless parenting warning system because I don't try and stop the bad thing from happening. I just watch it and go. When I was a kid, my dad was a principal of a primary school and there was a thing called a WYSIDIS, a piece of playground equipment that was in the school and a child in the school broke their leg on it, was deemed unsafe for children.
Yikes.
So my dad, being a very responsible principal, yoinked it out of the primary school playground and brought it home and set it up for us.
Hell yeah.
That's just inspiring.
This is the one we just spin around and around.
Yeah, the metal spider web.
Yes.
And the leg breaker.
That's my favourite thing in the playground.
Do they still have them actually now?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
From the actual.
You know that whole don't eat before swimming?
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a don't get in a car after half an hour after a whizzy diz.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're susceptible to a chunky cough.
Are the words whizzy diz in the dictionary?
They bloody were, but
you know, every year when they do the word of the year, can we get whizzy diz back? Because, my gosh.
Better than intuitification.
But if it's not in now. I mean, it probably won't be. Like, if we can
bring it back. Okay. I believe. Yeah.
Call your show Whizzy Diz.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, my next show should be called Whizzy Diz. Because what would you call a Whizzy Diz? Because I would call a Whizzy Diz that machine, like a one that you sat on, but also if you were picked up by an older, like a parent and spun around.
Naturally anti-clockwise.
Yeah.
Mm. But yes, I would do that. But the fact that the noun is the infrastructure, and I'm wondering if there's a distinction, because I agree, it applies to both. I don't know, Celia.
I'm really excited. We started
it. Wait, how long was it in your backyard for?
It's still there.
Oh, great.
It's in my dad's house. It's still there.
That's unbelievable. That's like getting a Gravitron at home.
It's like rusty. The playground, when I went home, like, it was. I don't go there often. It's in Yarra Glen still. The backyard looks like a prison backyard. Like, it's all metal and rusted. The car and blocks. Yeah, car and blocks, just weights. but just like a swing, like swings just tied to a tree just with yarn or something. Like, that's fine. But no, it's all still there.
Do you ever check your phone when you're pushing a child on a swing?
Maybe.
Yeah. Sounds like a loaded question.
I mean, it depends on what type of swing. She's getting bigger now. I was very scared of her falling out of a swing. I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think I'm too. I think my paranoia of her getting hurt overrides the fun. I'll do it when I'm driving. Kids on the swing. Yeah. Come on, that's outrageous.
All right. So there are three shows of Gift Horse at the Comedy Theatre. Do you like playing at the Comedy Theatre?
It's my favourite. It's my favourite. And the last special I filmed, no disrespect to the Athenaeum, but I missed the Comedy Theatre. And so I'm really excited. It's the first one. It's my favourite room to play. And in Melbourne, where it's my home, you know, I love the room. It's beautiful. It's massive, but it doesn't feel massive. It just feels fantastic. The seats are comfortable. I know that every seat in there is a good seat for the audience.
Exactly.
It's a great theatre to watch comedy in as well.
Yeah, it's really nice. So I'm really excited. I'm also still adding shows around Australia, and I'm taking the show back to Edinburgh, which I said I'd never go back. Mm. I really am flogging a gift horse because it won the best show, and I'm like, well, if not this year, what? Why would I never go back? Because it's so hard. Edinburgh is like... It's for a younger version of me. Like, it's worthwhile doing.
You got to hustle.
I think it's worth doing when you're trying to break into the UK and when you're young and you want to learn, because it's a month of, it's 24/7. It's a boot camp.
Right. I lived there years and years and years ago, and I saw you do a show where you played the piano.
Oh my gosh! Wow. Yeah. So that was my second one, my second show.
Oh wow.
And so I've done it four times, and the first time I went so new, I went with a show, my first ever hour show. I didn't even use a microphone. I had never been heckled before I went to Edinburgh, and I got to that country and got my ass yelled at for a month, and I went, I'm never doing that again. And then it's kind of that pregnancy thing where a month after I was like, actually, maybe I could. Maybe it wasn't that bad. I could go back.
What's the big deal?
And so I went back 3 or 4 years, and it's amazing, but at this point in my life, I'm like, no, but I'm only going for a week, and it's sort of... You know, this show, this is... If it's
a week. What a dream.
Week, that's it. 6:15. The daughter is half Irish, so we're using...
Oh, really? It's going to be a holiday.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's brilliant. Okay. Yeah. Well, you got to catch Gift Horse before it fucks off on you. It's going to be...
Excuse me, what?
Well, you're going to leave. You're going to wrap it up. You're not going to... we never know if you're going to perform again.
No, I'm absolutely not. I'm not doing it in Melbourne. This is something that I promise you. I'm not going to do that cheeky encore tour next year.
Yeah,
in Melbourne. No, this is it. But I am filming it, so you'll be able to see it at some point.
Okay.
But find me online, and that's where I'm putting all the information of where the new shows are being added if you have family in Port Macquarie. So, who knows?
Gift Horse at the Comedy Theatre. Celia Pecola, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
That's right, Triple R.
I mentioned my friend Matthew Vasquez earlier. We did a show together called Brown and Gay, which was a huge hit. But
for the one guy,
yeah, for Sam Toy, the one guy. But Matt, I think, has one of the best celebrity interactions. I think it's perfect. It was during Australian Open. He went to Cinema Nova. He was going up the stairs. Serena Williams coming down the stairs. And he said, "That's Serena Williams." And she said, "Yes, it is." And then she kept walking. Which I think that's nice. That's a good... You got to see Serena Williams. She didn't get too bothered.
Yeah.
She gets a little recognition, a little ego boost.
Yeah. And it's...
That's fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun one.
And you didn't have to go up and say, "Sorry, I just wanted to know if you're the famous person that I think you are."
Yeah.
And they go, "I'm having popcorn, leave me alone."
Yeah.
Yeah. Fleeting.
Fleeting.
Was it a involuntary...
Yes. He was shocked that he saw Serena Williams and then accidentally went, "That's Serena Williams." Mm. And then, yes, it is.
So good.
So good.
I wonder what she saw.
I have no idea. It was a couple of years ago, Wimbledon. So I couldn't...
Or that one about the threesomes.
She's like, it's nothing like that. Oh, challenges.
Yeah.
She's like, tennis is exactly this.
Tennis is so hot.
I have a celebrity attraction I'm not proud of, but I did chase Natalie Dormer through LAX Airport. Mm-hmm. I know. Liz, Mon's giving me a look.
Play it down that I don't know who that is. I was like, Natalie
Imbruglia?
Wow.
No, Natalie Dormer. You would know her face if you saw her, but she played Marjorie Tyrell in Game of Thrones. So.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And at the time, okay, and also when I saw her at the airport, it was 10 years ago, so it was peak Game of Thrones.
Okay.
People having watch parties. And at this point, I believe she's big on the show. She's married to, I want to say she married Joffrey. Anyways, I think she was with the psycho incest boy. So she's with him. She's a big deal. I'm behind her in the line at LAX with my friend Cherie, and we're going, I think that's Natalie Dormer. And it was, and then we weren't going to do anything about it, but then the TSA lady, she was like, that's Marjorie Tyrell. And we said, yeah, we know. And she said, well, I can't say anything to her because I'm working, but you can, and I need you to go get her for me. We were like, what? Oh, she's like, get a photo, say hello. Go do it. And I don't know if it's like the American accent and stuff, this speech.
She was in a uniform.
It was motivated.
Yeah,
she was,
and we like, yeah, we got motivated. We got all caught up and we were like, yeah, we should. And then we chased her through the airport.
Oh my God, terrifying.
And we stopped her just before she was about to, she almost got away from us. She was about to get in a lift and we're like, can we get a photo? And she was like, yeah, okay. She was nice about it, but yeah. She was like, you are a pair of freaks.
And you're sweaty.
And you,
you're also puffed out.
And we're like, you don't know, but we got like a really, we got a motivational speech from the TSA agent. We need to get a photo. And it was weird because like we got to her, we caught her, and then it was like, oh no, what do we do?
Yeah.
It's like catching a fish. It's like, how's this big? Throw it back.
And so did you go back and show the lady your photo?
No, we just went on. She just kind of.
I thought it was you had to go, yeah, show her your prize.
No, she would have been back through
the. She was just motivating you. You got to do it.
She got us all G'd up and then we caught Natalie Dormer. And
did you post it on social media?
No, I didn't post it on social media.
What is the point of and this?
She, I don't know. It's still on my phone somewhere.
Your background.
But she also, Natalie Dormer went through our phone and deleted the photo she didn't like.
Love that. Respect.
And then handed the phone back. She said, all right, there you go.
Was Natalie Dormer wearing a baseball cap?
No, but she was wearing like a, what do you call these? Not wide, a fedora, wide, but a
honestly,
wide
if you're wearing a hat indoors, it means leave me alone.
If you're wearing a hat indoors, it means you're famous.
We were gonna leave her alone, but then someone in a uniform told us not to.
Good on you. If you don't ask, you don't get, I suppose.
Well, I've never done anything LAX, with the photo.
And I feel like in LA, that's a bit more of the vibe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If she was at Tullamarine.
Avalon.
Leave her alone. Yeah, she's a cool and gutter.
Cool and gutter, yeah. If she's at a shed with a red rooster, give her some space. Yeah. She's not doing as well.
But LA, like, you want to be spotted.
Right?
Otherwise, get also, a private jet.
The worst airport in the world.
The world's worst airport.
Oh. You think it's, you think about all the money that goes through that airport. Mm. And you get in there and it's a public.
Is it a restaurant or cafe in Fitzroy with friends? Anyway, Toni Collette was at another table. And I wrote on the napkin to alert my friend what had happened. And he reads, he goes, Toni Collette. We are no longer friends.
Did she look up?
Yes, she looked up. I was humiliated.
And then he picked up the napkin and said, is this you? That's your name.
He said, you're terrible, Muriel.
Did she say anything?
No, I should have used the awkwardness maybe, but I was so humiliated. I was like, how dumb are you? You're like, you're the smartest person I know, and that was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, my God, so funny. But it's like
if I wanted to say it out loud, I would have used words out of my face.
Note, like we're in English class.
Yeah.
What could have been worse is if he went, who is Toni Collette?
No, my name is James. Yeah. Who is Toni Collette? Why are we talking about him?
So have you seen Natalie Dormer and do you follow her career still?
Not at all. I just have this one photo in my phone from a time when she was very famous, and I'm sure she still is. I feel like maybe is she in Hunger Games? I don't know.
I just looked her up and it just said she's known for her blockbusters. And I was like, name them. I said, no disrespect, but it's like it's a funny thing to say.
Alec Baldwin said I had a nice shirt.
What?
I was in New York and he looked in the streets of New York and he was like, I had a nice shirt.
God. And then did you worn it every
and
day
And then
since?
He shot someone. I couldn't believe
and
it.
And now you can never wear that shirt.
Yeah, all my celebrity interactions, they get cancelled.
You got anything on Epstein?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. Like, one of the best shows I went to was Bill Cosby. I can't say it.
Well, you can't say anything anymore. Everyone's silencing Daniel. I just want to talk about my love for Cosby.
Someone on the text line just said her friend was busting for a pee before a Cat Power show, ran around trying to find an alternative toilet at the theatre to jump the queue. She went downstairs. Cat Power was in there doing her makeup. Her friend said, "I love you," and Cat Power said, "I love you too."
Perfect.
That is amazing.
That's an incredible interaction.
She could be like, "Get the hell out of here." This is obviously like
I mean, she has every right.
Yeah, this is my private bathroom. And now you're only telling me you love me. Am I going to get murdered?
Yeah, we don't know the tone it was in. I love you too, and I'm just going to step out.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to call someone.
And I will be with you in just a second.
In just a second. Mm.
That's a shocking security at that theatre. Mm. I love it.
Yeah, more of that it. Shit. Yeah.
Unless Cat Power had just wandered in there. You know,
she was also trying to jump the queue.
All her band.
She's like, I'm sick of doing makeup with all the punters in the...
Yeah, with the fluorescent lighting. Yeah, I don't know. Mm. I was going to say, was it even a Cat Power show? Like, was she in the audience?
But what do you do once you've done that? Oh, sorry, there was no bathroom where the makeup was being had, I suppose. I mean, this is not your story. No.
I'll finish it. And then what happened is a friend pissed her pants.
That's what I'm expecting.
Do you, after your Natalie Dormer experience or your Tony Killett experience, are you shy? Like, would you go up to celebrities?
No.
No.
I wouldn't.
Because there's no TSA agent.
I need a TSA agent cheering me on. Yeah. And if they're not there, then it's not going to happen.
You're staring third quarter time, three quarter time speech. And we all need that.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I have been a lifelong huge Missy Higgins fan. And I sat next to her at a gig and said nothing the entire time and then just went home and told everyone about it.
Did you just watch
everything? It was like this tiny gig. I think it was a Grand Selvo gig upstairs, like at the Toff. There were like 30 people there and she said, can I sit there? And I was like, yeah. And then this was probably like 15 years ago. And then she just sat next to me the whole time and we watched the gig and it was totally quiet and intimate and then we left and I was like, I don't know any songs he played. But I was like, and yeah, whereas Will go up to anyone he's seen do anything ever and say
hi.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah. As a listener says, my brother and I went to the bar during a Bad Seed show and Mick Harvey was there. I nodded respectfully. My brother loudly says, "Who the hell is that?"
Mick Harvey would have loved that.
Triple R.
Leading thanatophile Marie Hardy joins us to talk books. Morning, Marie.
It's such a jarring pivot to go from what we were just talking about off air to the really sedate sounds of a typewriter and a piano.
I know.
The word equestrian was used. I'm not going to give you any context for it, but yes, hi, good morning, how are you?
Yeah, we're good. Winning, I think.
Oh, yeah. You seem to be in very good spirits this morning. I've been listening for a while.
It's all the equestrian chat.
Yes, it is all the off-air equestrian chat. But the good kind of brushings with famous people. I do think you should always tell someone when you admire their work.
Yeah, I agree. I just get too nervous.
Well, I mean, novelists never hear it. Yeah. You know, because they're kind of siloed away. So I always think when people have like a non-public, I mean, you recognise their name. To go up to a novelist in a public space and say, "I really loved your work," they will remember that for the rest of their lives.
But that's it, right? I really love your work.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Get out.
Yeah, don't say it really. Would you like to read my manuscript?
No.
That's a bad
and you might love my work.
Yeah. I do. I mean, words of affirmation is my love language, so I will always tell people that I really like their work. But I like doing it to strangers as well. I've been very affirming people's outfits and looks lately. I just go yes and point at them, and I realized I kind of made a slightly deranged one. There was a very handsome young couple walking down a street and they look like, you know, the cover of that Bob Dylan album, like, "We're in the 60s and we're on our way to, you know, a festival." Nice coats. That was so handsome. And I was walking my dog and I just pointed in a very circular way at them and went, "You two! You two!" And they kept walking. And I thought I should have said, beautiful, also how, "You two!"
Hopefully it was implied.
They're telling that story though. They're having a great time.
I hope so. Yeah. But you know what it's like. I mean, not to be gendered about it, but often women and AFAB walking down the street and going, a woman saying, "You look amazing."
Mm-hmm.
You go, that means more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never taking this off.
Yeah, exactly.
This is my
like
uniform.
Dan's shirt after Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's catcalling's over, isn't it?
Oh, you can't say anything anymore.
No, I mean, I wouldn't. Words of affirmation on someone's outfit, I wouldn't ascribe to catcalling.
No, I wasn't either.
But I remember walking down the street once in St Kilda many years ago. The place is irrelevant, but I had two gentlemen friends with me, like actual just friends. We weren't holding hands, we weren't doing anything untoward, and someone from a very long way away yelled out of their car, "Two blokes and one Sheila, you're red hot."
Wow.
It was so pre-planned. And I guess it was red hot. Okay. Two blokes and one Sheila, you're red hot. I mean, that was like 20 years ago and I still think about it. So, you know, affirm people while we still can.
Yeah. I think there's an art to it.
Yes,
and if
there
you're good
is.
At it, you can do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, because it is my love language, I'm good at it. And also I love compliments and affirmation. And I remember going to a medical appointment and I got complimented on how full my bladder was. And I said, "Thank you so much. I've got a praise kink." And she said, "Yeah, you told me that in our first meeting." So the praise kink continues through medical appointments. Anyway, let's talk literature. So, you know, when you see a book and you're like, "I've read about this somewhere and I can't remember what it was, but I need to buy it and I can't remember why." So I bought Deborah Adelaide's When I Am 64 and I thought, what is it about this? Death. It's about death. Of course, inadvertently, I had gravitated towards something about death. Deborah Adelaide is a celebrated novelist, academic. She's written nonfiction, fiction. This is in that beautiful kind of in-between stage of autofiction. Are you all across autofiction? It's kind of a way to write memoir but creatively.
But pretend it's not you.
So, no. This is based on Deborah Adelaide's friendship with the writer Gabrielle Carey. Trigger warning, what we're going to discuss will be about suicide because Gabrielle Carey took her own life at 64. Her father also took his own life at 64. So it's a book about mental health and friendship. I did see someone describe it as The Spare Room, like the Helen Garner book, but about mental health as opposed to cancer. It's very much about friendship and helping someone through a really difficult time. And obviously, Deborah Adelaide never names Gabrielle Carey. And actually, it was partway through the book where she talks about her friend, which is all she refers to Gabrielle Carey as, writing in a kind of a book that changed the lives about her pubescent years in a surfing crew. And I was like, oh, that's right, it's Gabrielle Carey. I forgot. Mm-hmm. It's a really tender and moving book. And I guess as a writer, I'm really interested in that exploration of form. Creative nonfiction is another genre that people are exploring. I mean, there are books that people write. I remember there was a book about, oh, this is John Lennon. What if he was still alive? And there's one called Guess Who's Back, which was a comic novel, stay with me, about Hitler being cryogenically frozen, stay with me, and coming back and becoming a reality TV show contestant. You're with me.
I'm back.
But I always find those quite audacious and I kind of get quite exhilarated by the audacity of it. Curtis Sittenfeld, this is one of the best, I guess it's, creative nonfiction. She wrote a book called Rodham, which was a book about Hillary Clinton that she wrote in first person. It's incredible and it's really based on facts. So that book is based on the premise, the true story that Bill Clinton apparently proposed to Hillary Clinton three times. She said no twice and yes the third time. So this book interrogates what happened if she said no three times. So it's a real fork in the road sliding doors book. But it's factually correct, but it's also me, Hillary Clinton. Here I am.
But I'm Hillary Rodham.
Engaging in sex acts.
Oh.
Yes, with Bill. There's a sex act in it. And I felt like I'm very intrusive in their life. But it's so fascinating to me that you can go, and what happens if she didn't marry Bill Clinton? I'm like, but she did. She did. Are we allowed to do that? Same with Tarantino in the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
What if the Manson murders didn't happen? They did.
Yeah.
It's so stunning. Like it's kind of exciting and kind of a bit terrifying to go, you as a writer, I could write a book about Dan Burt, the serial killer.
Yeah,
but he's
right.
Not a serial killer yet. but you can take it. I mean, Hillary Clinton is still alive and her photo was on the cover of the book and it's called Rodham.
Love it. Committing to the bit.
Did she ever write?
No. I've seen interviews with Curtis Sittenfeld where people go, did she read it? She's like, I don't know.
Oh, so you've got
she didn't get her permission. Of course you would read it. Yeah. So I think this is a very respectful book about Gabrielle Carey, and I think that Deborah Adelaide specifically chose autofiction as opposed to memoir, because memoir would have been, I guess, more detail-specific about Gabrielle Carey's mental health, about what this is more... A beautiful exploration of friendship. It's kind of a series of vignettes. You can see it's a very small book, novella size, but it's really lovely about it. They were friends for 50 years, and it's about that friendship, you know, spanning that length of time and not kind of realizing that someone is struggling. But it's really tender. It's such a tender book. And I really love that, again, that exploration of form, that you just get to go, I want to write about an experience that happened to me, but I don't want to write about it factually. I want to write about it emotionally. I want to be able to maybe sometimes get inside of the head of the other person I'm writing about, i.e. Hillary Clinton sucking D. That happens in the book. It happens. It's so stunning. How is she allowed to do that?
I don't know.
But yeah, it's beautiful. And then I think she talks about, if you read interviews with Deborah Adelaide, she talks about Gabrielle Carey's number still being in her phone and all the tenderness that comes with when you lose someone. Shockingly, suddenly, even if it's not through mental health, through cancer, whatever it is, and you look back on a friendship and either look at moments that you wish you'd held more in your hand. And she says there's hardly any photos of the two of them together because they, you know, they were parented together. They were both writers. There's a lot in here about writing as well, which is really interesting. But they were always the photographers in their family. So they got photos of their kids and them with their kids or someone else, but none of them together. So all I'm saying is go and take a photo of yourself and one of your best friends today.
Mate, I was just thinking, I'm like, oh, there are probably a lot of friends I don't have photos with.
I would say also having lost, I mean, I'm in Triple R, Jenny B, beautiful Genevieve Blackmore, who was a Livewire co-host many years ago now, and I've got very few videos of her, probably because we were coming of age in a time where, you know...
weren't filming everything.
Yeah, annoying, even though I hate everyone filming everything. But I have a few videos of her and I really cherish them. So I think hearing someone's voice, I mean, I'm a huge fan of voice notes. I leave, like, my friend and I are doing 40-minute ones.
Wow.
Listen, we're Type A personalities, so she will leave one for me and then I make notes and then I refer to my notes. It's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. My friend Ray said it would be his worst nightmare. But to have voice notes, to have something tangible or a video of someone moving. So, look, if there is someone you love that you're thinking about today and they are going to die, I'm sorry to break it to you, go and just, like, be a creep. Hold a camera up in front of them and they'll go away, get out. And then you'll have that after they die.
My cousin made a little voice recording of my grandma saying, I love you, just before she died.
That's so nice. Yeah, it's a really tender thing to have. Do you remember that guy who died in, I feel like it was Scotland or somewhere rakish, and then as the coffin was being lowered in, he got an audio recording of himself saying, oh, let me out. Hey, what's going on? Let me out. Have you seen that? It's so beautiful. And everyone's sort of crying and laughing. They go, that's so daring. So, I mean, you could do that, but I just think, you know, the joy of Deborah Adelaide is that she is a novelist, a writer, and an intellectual, and, you know, can't spell catharsis without art, right? So she gets to really move into that form. But the rest of us jabronis, like, what do we do to hold on to the people we love? I think finding something tangible you can hold on to, like a voice note or a video, is a good way to move through the world.
When I'm 6 foot, Deborah Adelaide, and Bin Chicken on the front, that's an Easter egg.
Yes. Well, there is a bird motif throughout.
Okay.
Bin Chicken in a clock. It feels like a kind of Harry Potter-esque kind of reference. Or something on a scavenger hunt for Melbourne Uni. Find a bin chicken. It's got to be in a clock. Get there.
The Noel Fielding bit. All right. That's beautiful.
Thanks.
Everyone do your thing and check in with loved ones and say you love them if you can find the courage. All right, Marie, check in soon. Thanks.
Triple R.
Thanks for listening to the Best Bits of Breakfasters. Catch us live on Triple R every weekday morning from 6 till 9 a.m. or listen on demand at rrr.org.au or on the Triple R app. You can get in touch with us via Instagram, Facebook or the Triple R website.